From KRCB in Santa Rosa, it's Mouthful, the wine country's most delicious hour with Michelle Anna Jordan.
Support for this public radio podcast comes from Visa, offering the Visa Signature Card, featuring concierge services for travel, dining, and entertainment at visasignature.com.
You better come on in my kitchen. There's hard to be raining out the
Coming up tonight on Mouthful, the Wine Country's Most Delicious Hour, it's a room full of Pinot Noir. So stick with us here on KRCB.
You throw in some tomatoes, tomato paste, you fry it to make sure it doesn't stick. You got to do a boil, you shove in all your sausage and your meatballs. Huh? And a little bit of wine. A little bit of sugar.
Delicious.
And that's my trick.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore.
Enough. I'm so sick and tired of hearing you people talk about food, food, food. That's all anybody ever talks about is prosciutto, cheese, and fava beans. I'm drowning here.
Jesus Christ, take it easy.
We're not even engaged yet.
When you're married, you'll understand the importance of fresh produce.
I eat with gusto, damn your bet. My country, tis of thee. I eat for social progress. I eat for victory.
Delicious.
Stay hungry, stay hungry, stay hungry.
You want some more?
Good evening and welcome to Mouthful, the Wine Country's Most Delicious Hour. I'm Michelle Jordan. I will be with you for the next hour on Mouthful's last episode on the first Sunday of April 2007. I was at the farmer's market today, and it was really lovely. I talked to Steven Singer for a while, and he told me he saw the sign just across the driveway on Petaluma Avenue, big sign saying Walmart coming soon. And I thought, wow, a Walmart in Sebastopol. Now, there's an idea. You know, it'll create a lot of foot traffic, so more people will see the farmer's market. And when the new West County Grill opens for brunch, which they're going to do sometime soon on Sunday, we'll have a lot more customer base. So Walmart coming to Sebastopol right when Mouthful is ending its nearly 12-year run. On that note, we're going to be talking about Pinot Noir today, as you might expect. Welcome, everybody. Say hello.
Hello.
Thank you for having us.
Happy April Fool's Day to all of you as well. Guy Davis, you are returning to Mouthful. You've been here at least once before.
Yes. Yeah. Well, and thank you for having me back.
You bet. Davis Family Wines, I am a great fan of your wines. They are, in a word, delicious.
Thank you. This is a perfect way to spend a Sunday evening.
Well, thank you very much. And Kathleen Inman of Inman Family Wines, I've been wanting to meet you, really wanting to try your wine, so thank you very much for taking the time to be here.
Oh, thank you. I'm looking forward to this.
And Ross Halleck, Halleck Vineyards, known you since shortly after you moved here to Sonoma County, so thanks for being a Mouthful.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
And Ted Elliott, T.R. Elliott is the label, and you're also part of the Wine Entrepreneur Program at Sonoma State University.
Thank you very much for that. Pleasure to be here, Michaela.
And then we may have Michael Brown from Costa Brown Winery joining us in a little while, with luck. So, first thing, the reason for this, not that you ever need a reason to do anything with or about Pinot Noir, but the reason that it's tonight rather than last week or next week is coming up on April 20th and 21st, Hospice de Sonoma. My understanding is it's the largest Pinot Noir barrel auction in America now. That's what all the press releases say.
Yes, absolutely.
No, absolutely.
Yes.
And you're all participating.
Mm-hmm. Yes, this will be my first year. So.
And then it leads into, on Monday, is the Earth Day celebration that is taking place all or in part at Iron Horse Vineyards. A lot of stuff about alternative energy, I've heard, is going to be going on there as well. So we're going to be talking about Hospice de Sonoma, but we're going to be talking about Pinot Noir in general and each of these labels as well. And since there's all these bottles spread out, I think we should just start drinking as early as we can. So, Guy, what are you pouring?
I'm going to pour the 2004 Pinot Noir from my vineyards that are just out between Sebastopol and Forestville. Small little hillside vineyards, southeast exposures. I've got several different clones planted there. I planted the vineyard 11 years ago and start my day every day trotting down that slope from my home and tending to my children.
Oh, nice. So why don't you go ahead and pour it? Can pour a little bit right here. It sounds so good. So as you pour, tell me just a little bit there. Great. Let me see the label. Okay, this is the 2004 Russian River Valley.
And all estate. As I said, a combination of different mm-hmm. clones, and I planted this property in 1996.
Mm-hmm. And is this the current release? Your
yes,
current release, 2004?
Well, it's the currently sold out wine. The next release will be available in the fall of the 2005, so we have just a small amount of this we're trying to sprinkle around locally here to keep restaurants in supply through the end of the spring and summer.
It has the Pinot thing in it.
Thank you.
It has that real silk. It's sort of like velvet on satin. Not velvet on velvet, but velvet on satin or silk on satin. And then there's this Pinot thing. And I don't know how to, I've never gotten better at describing it than saying the Pinot thing. And people who know what it is, like you, Kathleen, you just all get this little smile on your face. It's so cute. So your wine has the Pinot thing, and it's really a pretty, pretty example. Could you talk about a few of the clones that are in it?
Absolutely. There are nowadays the Dijon clones, a variety of number 777, 667, 115 seem to be what has been planted most frequently in the last decade. But a third of this vineyard is the Pommard clone, which is talked about a lot as one of the older clones. Mm-hmm. It on my site carries a lot of that, as you call it, the Pinot thing.
I've been having discussions with several different people who are fans of the same style of Pinot Noir as I am, and we've been questioning whether it's the Pommard clone that really expresses that quality that we're talking about.
I think that thing we're talking about is a combination of a lot of small things. I think knowing what that is and having that be part of your focus. For me, the bullseye really is as much richness as possible without ever losing that really beautiful, mm-hmm. sensual side of Pinot Noir. So some people describe it maybe as forest floor or all the way out to bacon fat or some myriad in between. But it really is that combination of something earthy,
it's certainly
something
a combination of qualities.
Special other than just the fruity character. So I love both the red fruit and dark fruit that appears in this wine. But as you said, Pinot Noir really needs to be something pretty. For me, and the style that I love to drink and love to make, it needs to be a very pretty wine. Mm-hmm. I think the color needs to be pretty. I don't think that darker is better for me. I love something beautiful, as I like in the aromatics and in the flavors and in the finish of the wine. So I'm really trying to strike this balance between richness and never sacrificing that really sensual side of the wine.
Yeah, well, it's there in all its glory. It's really beautiful. Kathleen, tell us what are you going to push my glass over
there? The reassuring sound of a Stelvin opening. I brought my 2004 Olivet Grange Pinot Noir. It's from my own vineyard. I farm this organically. It's 10.5 acres on Olivet and Piner. It is Dijon clones. Mm-hmm. I have five Dijon clones planted, 114, 115, 667, 828, and 777. Mm-hmm. And I made about 1,000 mm-hmm. cases of this. I'm a pretty small producer. I'm up to about 2,500 cases. But my wines are, you know, small production, handmade. And Pinot Noir is the most mm-hmm. feminine of grapes, so you got to smell the girl in the glass. So if
That's
you
a
don't,
great way to put it.
If you don't have that sort of beautiful floral mm-hmm. aroma that I think Pinot can have, that sort of roses and lavender, but that sort of sexy, earthy mm-hmm. smell on the nose, then you're really kind of missing some of the potential of Pinot Noir. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is another very pretty line. In the glass, it has that really pretty quality, not dark and inky. You know, that some Pinots will go towards that darker yeah. more extracted. And I don't know if it's that sometimes, you know, I wonder, well, are they coming from Carneros where the skins get thicker because of the wind, and so that causes the deeper color? I guess there's several things that would
Yes, I think that.
But this is really light and beautiful.
Well, I think also I do tend to pick a lot earlier than other people. I like wines that I don't have to make any additions to the juice, no water, no acid. And so I pick earlier because I like lower alcohol wines that don't make you fall asleep
bless
on the
you,
sofa.
Bless you, bless you. I am with you.
So I do tend to not have super dark wines. They mm-hmm. tend to be just pretty.
Yeah, this is very, very pretty. So, Ross, what do you have over there with you?
Well, today I brought my three sons, which is actually a blend of three vineyards.
Okay.
And... But it is not it is not named after the three vineyards. It's named after my three children, Adam, Connor, and Quinn. And it's just coincidental that this year it's three vineyards. And the clones are 667 and 777. And I would chime in with Guy and Kathleen in terms of trying to achieve that wonderful sort of balance, that beautiful balance between fruit and the femininity, and also that feral kind of, you know, exciting kind of sensual aspect.
Feral, that's a great word to use to describe this feral quality. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Sort of like, a really attractive feral cat.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let me give it a taste here. Very lovely. Very lovely. And where exactly are the vineyards?
Well, in fact, they're just virtually spitting distance from each other, which is so interesting. One is the Hallberg Vineyard, which is on 116 at Occidental Road, mm-hmm. right
near by Hallberg apples.
Right, exactly. The old Hallberg apple orchards, which are now Goldridge Pinot. And right across Scott's right-of-way is a two-acre vineyard called the Farm Vineyard, farmed by a couple of friends of ours who are just absolutely fastidious in their attention to this vineyard. And we have a long-term relationship and contract on these grapes. And we also make a vineyard designate of each of those two wines that we sort of take a little bit of. There's only about 600 cases of this wine made and about 100 to 200 cases of each of the vineyard designates made. Mm-hmm. And then a small amount of Hawksroos Vineyard, which is also not far, and that gives it a little bit more of the acid, and the Hawksroos has that sort of edgy character that brings some of the more complex notes to this blended wine.
Mm-hmm. Well, really nice. Again, did you say? Probably did. 2004?
This is 2005.
Oh, 2005. Okay. Mm-hmm. I've been hearing really good things about this vintage.
It's been a fabulous vintage for us, yes.
Okay, and finally, Ted.
Thank you very much. I brought the 2004, which is the same vintage as Guy and Kathleen brought. This is, let me give you a taste of this. Ooh, I got the pop right. Like everyone who just spoke, these are many of the Russian River farmers are looking at Dijon clones and the importance of those Dijon clones, balanced with the importance of the terroir, the site that these come from. I'm not quite sure I know whether the most important factor in the taste really comes from the soil or the clones. However, this is only my third vintage, and my feeling right now is that the clones contribute as much as the site, because all of us are picking really from the same band of Goldridge soil that runs from mm-hmm. Forestville to Sebastopol. So I would think that given the soil and the climates are very similar. Mine is predominantly 90% clone 777 and a little bit of 115 in Pommard. I think to your earlier question about Pommard, I think that does give a lot of Pinots its rich mouthfeel and sometimes a darker color. At least I attribute that a little bit to this wine that we're drinking tonight from mine. There are two vineyard sources in here, both I planted. One in the mid-90s on Vine Hill Road, used to be the racetrack for a horse called Cavenier. And maybe that's some of the horsiness in the wine would come from those early days. And the second, the Hallberg Vineyard, Ross and I both share some heritage from that. And that was this is the oldest part of the vineyard. And since I had a little insider track on choosing the location of the vines, I chose the oldest, a hilltop that I think has one of the nicest exposures of Hallberg. So I blended those two in here and named this Cuesta, which is, for those who don't know, 13th century French literature. I borrowed that from a title of a book called La Cuesta del San Graal, and that, of course, translates to the Quest of the Holy Grail. And that is a reminder, I think, to me and most of us in this business that it's pretty hard to get it right. And you got to keep looking for Pinot Noir, and you got to keep looking for what everyone here has a different name for. I might call charm, balanced with a lot of sophistication if you can. Getting it right is very difficult, so you look for those years you get it right. And I think all of us today have gotten it right with our 2004s and 2005s.
Yeah. These are all, every wine here is really, really beautiful. Thank you all for bringing them. I feel really lucky to be in the presence of all these good wines. At this time of year, I always think of this as the fragile season. And although I know many things can go wrong at any time of year, what is it that's happening in the vineyard right now that will sort of get you started or derail you?
You mean it'll be keeping me up at night?
Yes,
right,
what
now
do you worry frost. About at 3 a.m.?
Frost.
Frost,
because
oh, frost.
We've had all this lovely warm weather, and mm-hmm. I keep hearing people say, oh, isn't it lovely? And I'm thinking, No, it's too early.
Warm.
It's too early.
Yeah.
Because we have a lot of delicate shoots that are coming out on the Pinot Noir, and in my vineyard, only a portion of it is frost-protected. So if we have a serious frost, I am in, you know, always every year in danger of losing part of my crop. So it's quite a scary period as we, you know, we have to really get through to May before I can breathe a sigh of relief and sleep soundly at night.
Now, is frost more of a potential threat than rain at this time of year?
I'm concerned about rain personally just because of in 2004 we had some late rains that caused our vineyards to shatter, and we lost almost the entire estate vineyard as a result of that. So we're above the frost line up on the hill, so we never get frost, but we do get those rains.
Yeah, but we could use some rain now. We're really behind on rainfall, and and the drier soil doesn't allow the vines to take up the nutrients that they need. You know, you don't want to have the soil so wet like it was last year. A lot of vines had difficulty taking up the available nutrients because it was just the soil was so saturated. Mm-hmm. Now we have the opposite. It's dry, and if it continues to be dry, when we get to bloom, a really critical time for the nutrient uptake in the plants, and there's not enough moisture in the soil, it's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
But then, of course, when you have bloom, you don't want rain then because you won't get the grapes pollinated.
That was certainly the case, wasn't it, in 2005 when we had a very, very spotty set in western part of the Sonoma County. Depended on whether the soils were warm or a little bit cooler, we had some rains that knocked a lot of flowers all over the place. And so in the Hallberg Vineyard case, which I know pretty well, many blocks were totally wiped out and others escaped entirely, just really depending on what the flowering was at the stage of the rain. I think that's really what you were referring to. And you talked about the rain. It can be damaging. You have to have the rain, but if it's a hard rain when the flowers are young, then, of course, the flowers which contain the future grapes won't survive.
It was like the peach crop last year. Lost, I know, Dry Creek Peach and Produce lost nearly, you know, their entire crop. So it is a fragile thing.
As much of a concern as it is to lose the clusters and have a shorter crop, for me, it's just as important to get an even set, not just a big or small, because we do a lot of thinning, but the rains during the bloom will also cause some of the set to be uneven. So you'll get clusters that are ahead of other clusters, or you'll even find within the same bunches when you have an extreme situation like 2005. And for me, picking everything at exactly the right moment is key. It's the biggest decision of the year. And so we micromanage the hillside that we farm on, starting at the very top. And we maybe will pick this little 6-acre vineyard in 6 or 7 pieces. But when you get that rain during the early part of the season, right in the middle of bloom, you may shift that perfectly even crop ripening that you're shooting for all season long. So that, along with you know, the other 150,000 things that Pinot Noir can turn on you during this growing season is what we're all looking at. I mean, right now, as far as frost for me, I've sort of, when you begin farming, I think, especially Pinot Noir, you sort of need to give yourself to Mother Nature. And mm-hmm. with frost, you can't really worry about it because there isn't that much to do. You can prepare for it, as with any of these climactic catastrophes, you can prepare and you can react, but I don't think I've been fortunate enough to be able to give up losing sleep and just play the hand that Mother Nature deals you, and then you react in the vineyard. So right now we're strategizing as though everything's going to be great, and we're looking at buds that will be rubbing off here shortly to start thinning crop and taking away crowding of certain shoots, because the yields that we pull our vines back to, oftentimes we'll see buds show up crowding near the head that we don't want down mm-hmm. the road. So although it's risky to start playing with those things right now in case we were to get rains at the bloom, we're already starting to spot some of
living
those things
dangerously.
That we're going to kind of start reining things in, so we don't have any energy going out on something that we won't be carrying all the way through the season.
Wow, cool. You're listening to Mouthful on KRCB. It's Mouthful. It's Michelle Jordan. It is KRCB Public Radio for Sonoma County. We are talking about, well, when it comes to wine, we're talking about my favorite subject, Pinot Noir. And coming up on April 20th and 21st is an event that is very hard for me to say. It is the Hospices of Sonoma. You may know the better known Hospice de Bonne. Sort of hard. As soon as my tongue gets to hospice, it wants to say duh. But it's Hospices of Sonoma, and it's the sixth year, am I right?
This will be the fourth.
Oh, the fourth year. Right? Okay, I was thinking six. I'm getting it mixed up with another event. And you're doing some interesting things to sort of try to brand the event, Ted. This is Ted Elliott of T.R. Elliott. Do you want to talk about this label, this beautiful label, and how you're doing, approaching this?
Yes,
idea?
And maybe I should explain, at least to your listening audience, that I have some longevity with this charity. We founded it in 1986. To turn back into the community the blessings that the county has bestowed on us in terms of farming and people that live here. And I think it's every winemaker's obligation to do that. In the last 4 years, we focused on Pinot Noir and tried to bring, in this case, a good marriage of bringing the new vintage, which is going to be on display in April, to the consumers, as well as recognize the importance of turning back to local charities what we can from that. So this is the fourth year where we've had a barrel auction, and the wines that at least I know personally that each of the four that are here tonight have made a very special barrel for us, a half barrel really. And I would say if I'm typical of these, it's the first blending that we do, and I think everyone here has used the opportunity of this event to go through all the barrels they may have in their cellar and find the nicest combination to be shown to the public at this event. And that's what will be auctioned off. So it will be unique in the sense that it won't be available at any other place except at this auction. And I think it will represent the finest there is of the whole Sonoma Coast, Russian River, Green Valley, Appalachians.
And how is the event? First of all, how's the event structured? And then let's talk about how you all are participating.
Well, the event has a Friday night component. Those guests who want to dine with wineries that have space can get tickets. The best route to do that is the online hospicesofsonoma.org.
And we'll give all that information again right at the end of the show, so get your pencils now.
And there are some events. So Friday night, that would be a private dinner. Usually the wineries can host 10 or 12 people for private dinner, and that would then obviously be showcasing the wines from that winery. On Saturday, the event is open to the public. The Saturday has got really a wonderful combination of wine tastings, 38 wineries, and I'll hand you the sheet, if you'd like, of the producers who have donated to us. And there will be, the public will be allowed to taste each of these 2006 vintage Pinot Noirs at a private barrel tasting. And we have a wonderful dinner and auction of those barrels following that. And then when it's all done, we're going to let our hair down and dance to Eddie Money.
Oh, Eddie Money, huh?
Tell us about him.
Wow, yes.
Two tickets to Paradise.
That's right.
How's that?
Very good, all right.
I remember.
And a bottle of Pinot Noir.
There you go. I remember the last time I heard that song. I was in the back seat of a car driving, driving on Geary Boulevard towards a club, and the song came on KSAN. And somebody said, turn the station, and someone else said, turn it up.
All right.
And I did not want to admit to liking the song because it wasn't quite as hip as, you know. A lot of people didn't think it was hip who were listening to some of the stuff I was listening to. Anyway, music is a trigger like that for me, so let me not get diverted. So this list here of Hospices of Sonoma, it's all the different labels, which is so cute.
Well, I think we have some of the finest producers in the region, as I said.
You've got Flowers, Freeman, some I don't know. Let's see, Dutton Goldfield, Deloach. These are the ones with big print. Russian Hill, Jay, Costa Brown, Iron Horse, Inman Landmark, Paul Hobbs. There's T.R. Elliott, Sonoma Coast Vineyards, Tandem Roots changed their label. Patson Hall, MacPhail. So
something that I think is important to mention is that this is a selection by peers. So it's an honor to be invited to this event.
And say a little more about that.
Well, there was a core group that began Hospices 4 years ago, and collectively, as the event has grown, they've sort of internally selected and invited the other wineries to participate, and so it's really quite the privilege and honor to be invited to attend this.
So, invitation only. What does it cost for the public to attend the event?
A table. What we hope is that the public will come with their friends, and we're selling tables of 8 tickets. I think it's $2,300 for that. Which would include all the barrel tasting, the 4 or 5, I think it's a 5 or 6 course dinner, actually, and then Eddie Money in the evening.
And how's the dinner structured? Who's doing the dinner?
Bruce Reisman will do the dinner. We're going to have all Pinot-friendly foods, as you could guess. So that will include, we will have a salmon course and a duck course, some cheese, and an open dessert bar that won't be lacking in anything. And during the tasting of the Pinot Noirs, we're going to have some Pinot-friendly palate cleansers.
Okay.
And let's not fail to mention that individuals can certainly buy tickets to the event. And so if you don't have, 7 friends that you want to join you...
That you can drag to an event with you.
Well, and you'll meet plenty of fellow people that love Pinot and Eddie Money and good food.
Now, have we said where the barrel auction is taking place?
We haven't. It's at the Schoen Farm, which is the Santa Rosa Junior College.
Yes, yes.
Right. And we were blessed to be the first of the public events at that center.
That's great.
The Dutton Pavilion, of course, honors the farmer that really might be singularly responsible for getting cold climate Pinot Noir to work in the western part of the county.
Oh, really? Warren Dutton.
Warren Dutton, right. Uh-huh. He went west when all the rest of the farmers were playing it safe and going to warmer climates. He went to the colder climates and thought that Pinot Noir and Chardonnay would ripen when nobody else believed it. He started that about 20 years ago. And really,
now, wasn't one of the other people who did that? Oh, God. Okay, come on. Help me. Roccioli.
Well,
Joe Roccioli.
I don't know all of his vineyards. He's along the Russian River.
Yeah, West Side Road.
West Side Road is, he makes, I think the virtue of his vines is not only how talented that family is, but his vines are very, very old, and I think they withstand mm-hmm. a lot of things that they don't in the Western. I don't think really, though, that it has quite the cool climate.
I see. So not as cool there on West Side Road.
Right.
And I just remember the story, and I'm not going to remember now the name of the man who told me. I have it written down. But one year, Joe's Cabernet still wasn't ripe by Halloween, and then it wasn't ripe by Thanksgiving.
Wow.
And somebody told him to rip it out and put in Pinot. And this was in something like 1967 or 68. And so he thought nobody was going to buy the grapes. But the version of the story I was told, Rodney Strong bought the grapes.
Wow.
And actually made a very good Cabernet with it. But he ripped out the cab and he put in Pinot. And that's where Pinot, from that whole little golden triangle there on West Side Road.
Well, we can't credit him enough with helping getting Pinot Noir started in the county.
And you're right. It's sort of over. There's a little barrier there at the south part of West Side Road, and you go over that barrier there at the curve at Waller Bridge, and it does get a little bit cooler. I know, because I like cool weather. You are listening to A Mouthful.
It only goes to show that a man can never know what lies in the heart of the one that he loves so. I heard it said before about 100 times, never give your heart away, 'cause love is blind. You better give it up anyhow, and then
it's Mouthful. It is April 1st. We are drinking a Pinot Noir. Mm-mm-mm. What did you just pour, Guy? Mm. Is that the same wine or a different
one? No, it's the same.
Oh, well, you can pour me a little more. I'll drink it a second time and see how it's changed.
Well, that's the beauty, is it does change in the glass. And
it does.
Think that I don't like to decant Pinot Noir because I like to see how it changes in the glass and, you know, enjoy it over the course of an evening.
Okay, Evelyn, how did you get into making Pinot Noir?
Well, gosh, I grew up in the Napa Valley, so
does
I
anyone
grew
accuse
up around
you of having an accent?
Well, that's from 16 years of living in the UK, in Yorkshire.
Okay.
I was working in a winery in the Napa Valley, and I met my charming husband, Simon, and I ended up moving to England.
Okay. Because it's interesting, I was hearing that little bit of an accent, but I also, a long time ago, heard Barry, so we're sitting at a table with Barry Sterling, because if I'm on the East Coast, I get accused of having an accent. And I heard Barry Sterling talk about how the San Francisco accent, and it's like, huh? Who knew? But he talks about how the San Francisco accent has just a hint, just a slight sound of British English in it. And so I was wondering if it was just that and a little more pronounced.
Well, I'm a third generation Napan. Uh-huh. My family were prune farmers
in Napa. Whereabouts in Napa?
Napa itself.
But
I was born up in St. Helena. Oh, my family had out on Monticello Road as you head out towards Silverado Country Club.
Uh-huh.
My sister still lives on the 1 acre that's left that my family have.
My mother and my younger daughter were both born in Napa. So I have.
Yeah, I was born up in Anglin at the sanitarium. So my family, no alcohol when I was growing up. So I was a bit wayward when I went to university. I discovered wine, and I was absolutely fascinated when the first wine tasting I did, and they took the bags off the bottles, and I was like, three of them were from Napa Valley, and I was like, wow, they make this where I'm from.
I had no idea.
This is great.
I didn't know wine when I was growing up at all. I don't think I saw a bottle of wine. Really, until I moved to Sonoma County. Yeah. As a young adult, it was not part of our lives.
Well, we had Manischewitz.
Yeah. Plugging other brands.
I'm not going to tell you the first thing I ever drank, believe me. What about Guy? What's your background?
Well, I was very fortunate because although there was no wine in my home as I grew up, I put myself through college working in the kitchen for a French restaurant.
Where did you grow up?
My parents moved all over throughout We started in Seattle, moved throughout the Midwest, and ended up back on the West Coast. But I started school in Seattle, Washington, and at 19 years old, I worked for a French chef and a French restaurant owner. So I'd go to school all day and work 4 to midnight in the kitchen. And at the end, it was just the chef and I in a small little creperie, and at the end of the night, I would make dinner for the three of us, and they would sit down to dinner and open a bottle of French wine, and I would clean the kitchen and join them. So every night, I had the opportunity to learn about another wine region and the grapes that were in those wines. And at that point in time, I assumed that all sophisticated adults had this wine knowledge. And after a couple of years, my palate was aligned well with the restaurant owner, and he decided not to come in so early every night. And so I'd start to meet with the reps at 4 p.m. when they'd come in. And so I was buying all the wine for the list by the time
I
was 21.
Well, what a great opportunity.
Yeah, now that I look back, I had more wine knowledge at 19, 20, 21 than some people ever attain. So I was really lucky.
You know, I should research this a little bit at some point. There was a restaurant in Cotati when I was very young, and I started working there as a waitress. And the chef owner, it was called Achenu, and it's now a sushi restaurant that's gone through a couple names. But the owner went this one time to somewhere in Santa Rosa, and it was a wine warehouse. And he bought all this really, really, he bought all this wine cheaply. It wasn't cheap wine, but it was like dusty bottles, a lot of half bottles. And he just said, here, sell this. We've got a whole lot of this, sell this. And then at the end of the night, we would eat and drink together. And there are things like splits of Chateau Margaux. And just all these wines, there's no way in the world I ever would have gotten to taste any of these things. And they were extraordinary. And he was actually from Algeria, so French Algerian. And, I probably worked Thursday, Friday, and Saturday nights and had these incredible French wines that he'd gotten for like $3 a bottle or something up in Santa Rosa at some warehouse. So those kinds of early formative experiences are really... They shape your palate, and they're really great memories. Ross, how did you... You moved here in the early 90s, late 80s, early 90s?
Early 90s.
Where from?
From Menlo Park.
Mm-hmm. And how did you get involved in the vineyard business?
Well, I moved up here to plant a vineyard, and I had spent the previous 15 or 18 years with a marketing and advertising agency in Palo Alto, and... the wine industry was my primary focus. So I was going back and forth between Silicon Valley and the wine country. And by the time I figured out that it would be more advantageous to commute to Silicon Valley and come home to the wine country, I decided that it was time to put in a vineyard. So I moved out to West County, and in fact, our vineyard out on Burnside Road was probably one of the first Pinot vineyards in that region, and it was a roll of the dice. And interestingly enough, the Duttons put in that vineyard.
Oh, great. And Ted, you've been involved in this business for a long time, and you've seen it change and develop and transform itself over the years.
Well, with that introduction, I don't have to say how old I am. But
I can say the same thing about myself.
Well, that's good. Okay, and you're more attractive than me. So, I have to claim 30 vintages in Sonoma County, all in sort of the same region. But I like to think that my progression through the varietals is what's going to happen in this country. I started with Cabernet and a small Mayacama mountain range vineyard. And loved that experience, and then moved into Chardonnay when that was a very popular wine. And I think I've landed on my last run at the wine business, which is Pinot Noir. And I think many, many wine tasters will tell you that it's very easy to be attracted to Cabernet, and as you said, the seduction of the five first growths, which is what got everybody in my era into it. And then through how wonderful Chardonnay is, but Pinot Noir, to me, takes all the credit. All the stars are in Pinot Noir. So I'm very lucky that in the twilight of my career to be involved just in Pinot Noir, and that's so. I think everyone at this table will share that.
Well, Pinot Noir is so interesting because there are so many styles, and it is so sensitive to the place that it's grown that you get such variety. I think that's just one of the endlessly fascinating.
Endlessly fascinating, yeah, and that was just what I was going to say. Let's go down that alley a little bit. It seemed for a while, maybe, you know, I'd say this decade and, you know, the middle of this decade in particular, it seemed that there may be a trend that dominated, which was making darker, and someone even bragged about it as the Cabernetization of Pinot Noir, and I don't know who said that, and the person who knows won't tell me.
Wouldn't have been Robert Parker.
No, it was a winemaker, but it was probably in response to Robert Parker, and it seemed for a while, it seemed like there were a few vintages, or just maybe what I tasted, it's like, oh God, this is going to happen. And then there were the few voices saying, no, we want it pretty. So what do you see happening, particularly in Russian River Valley, which seems to me an infinitely pretty appellation? What do you see happening with that? These styles, I mean, I can't imagine that anyone would just not be totally seduced by all of the wines in the room at the moment. So what do you see happening with that conflict?
Well, for me, I feel so fortunate to have found the location that I did in Russian River Valley, because that was a goal of mine, was that I really did believe that Russian River Valley could truly be world class and compete with any other Pinot Noir on the globe if someone really had the time and the heart and passion to pursue that. And there's four people here at this table that do it, and a dozen others, or two dozen others, that'll be at this hospice event. But Russian River Pinot Noir needs to be pretty wine. And so to push that to be bigger is better is not the Pinot Noir answer for me. So although there is a variety of styles out there, and there are warmer regions which are going to produce wines more masculine, I think here in Russian River Valley, if you do it correctly and you farm to the place, mm-hmm. and you farm to the grape, you will end up with a really beautiful wine.
I agree. I looked when my husband and I moved from England to start our project in 1998, we looked at Anderson Valley, we looked at Caneros. But really, the Russian River is just so pretty that, and not just a pretty place to live, but I mean, produces these very silky, elegant wines that, you know, I was convinced I needed to find a piece of land here. Excuse me, my throat's all.
It's hay fever season.
It is hay fever season, absolutely. And I was out in the vineyard this morning, so it added to it.
How many acres do you have?
It's a 10.5-acre piece, mm-hmm. but it's about 8 vine acres. I have mostly Pinot Noir, about 12,500 Pinot Noir vines, and about 1,000 Pinot Gris, because I do make a little bit of Pinot Noir's mutant cousin, mm-hmm. Pinot Gris.
Mm-hmm. Either of you, Ross or Ted, want to weigh in on what I was saying about the Cabernetization of Pinot Noir?
Well, I think what's really interesting about Pinot Noir is also intimidating to people, because it is so much a grape and a wine of the place, and it can create so many expressions, beautiful, beautiful expressions that are each in their own right great, that it's often intimidating to people when they begin tasting Pinot Noir to know what is good and what isn't good. It's hard for people to really get a sense of what their palate is and what they enjoy. And I think that particularly Russian River is a great place to start tasting Pinot Noir because of that beauty. And if you are at all comfortable with knowing what you like, I think that Russian River Pinot Noir, in its delicacy and in its floral notes and in its complexity, it's a crowd pleaser every time.
Yeah, a good place to start and end. I remember when I had one foot in Manhattan for a few years. I really wanted to go there, but I sort of knew I didn't want to leave the Russian River Valley. And I live in the southernmost tip of the Green Valley Appalachian, which puts me still inside of the Russian River Valley Appalachian. And nothing that I've tasted has made me think that there are that I'll find better wines anywhere else in the world. I really do think it's an extraordinary place. I want to talk a little bit more about Hospices of Sonoma. Is there an opportunity for online participation in the bidding?
Yes, there is, and I would suggest that anyone interested in doing that, probably the easiest thing would be to, when you announce at the end of the show, make sure you list Jane Young, who is our executive director, and the telephone number to her. I'm not sure whether our website has a line to do that, but I think it would be wonderful if those who can't come but are interested in these wines would contact us.
Yeah, there is a mention on your homepage about Jane being the contact for proxy bidding.
We've had some that have expressed an interest because it's of course a long way from Manhattan to Russian River, and many people in Manhattan, I think, I'm hoping, will perk up when they hear your show and might express an interest in these wines.
That would be really nice. I know we have listeners all over the world now, thanks to iTunes and the miracle of modern electronics. And if ever there were something to participate in from a long distance, I would recommend this. And now, oh God, you've just given me a list. We can name producers. And this is as of the beginning of February. We have Chaucer, Davis Family Wines, Deloach Vineyards, the Dunham Estate, Dunaw Vineyard and Winery, Dutton Estate Winery, Dutton Goldfield, Thalia Wines, Flowers, Fappiano, Freeman, Gary Farrell, Gloria Ferrer, Goldridge Pinot, Halleck Vineyard, Hartford Family Winery, Inman Family Wines, Iron Horse Vineyards, Jay Vineyards, Costa Brown, Landmark. They're Grand, what is it, Grand Detour? It is really a nice wine. Linmar Winery, McMurray Ranch, absolutely. Marimar Estate, Martinelli, Olivet Lane, Patz and Hall, Paul Hobbs, Radio Coteau, Russian Hill Estate, Shug, Sidori, Tandem, T.R. Elliott, and Wild Hog Vineyard. That's quite a great lineup.
Well, I think we're all quite pleased to be part of that. Would it be of any interest to your listeners to know who the beneficiaries are of this
Absolutely.
Event? We're very fortunate this year to have three. We've spent some time with this, almost the same process of as having the participants of the wineries look out, look to charities that we felt would help children in threatening circumstances, and also a nod towards current crises in the world. And I want to recommend those of you who may be interested in to purchase these wines, recognizing that at least half of your purchase price can go directly to these charities. Campo Kaizu is a mission in Novato whose foundation is created to provide respite and support programs to meet the needs of family members whose children are with cancer. The Children's Village is in Sonoma County to provide a home, a stable home environment for children in foster care. And Barry Zito, who we have a strong relationship with the baseball fans of the Bay Area, has a strikeout for the troops, which we're going to support this year. Well, strike. He and many, many baseball players founded a charity is a national project support war wounded troops, and so quite a few Major League Baseball players, about 30 of them, have supported this. And because we wanted to, as we do every 3 or 4 years, support something that we feel is imminent, even though it may not be children in life threatening circumstances. Barry Zito and his group, I think, were number one in stepping up to the plate, as they say in that sport, and helping war-wounded troops. So
helping—that's for war. Okay, that's why I couldn't tell from the title. So there's really a lot of beneficiaries
this year. Well, we're very fortunate to have these three. I think they're all wonderful organizations, and I hope that those who come and taste the wonderful wine will also recognize that not only are they getting something that they'll remember forever, but so will the children and the war-wounded troops that receive the money from their purchases.
Okay, so in the little bit of time we have left, we have 4 or 5 minutes, for people who are listening out of the area, what can we tell them about finding your particular wines and Russian River Valley wines in general? Since we've been starting with you all the time, Guy, why don't we move it over to Ted so he doesn't have to wait for the circle to get around to him. Ted, if somebody wants T.R. Elliott wines, what do they do if they're not here?
I think, like many here, I think my website, and I would suggest maybe the website of all small producers. I make under 1,000 cases, and I'm very proud to have distribution in California through some great relationships with brokers. But trelliott.com is about the best way to find out where you can get my wine.
Two L's?
Two L's and two T's.
Two L's and two T's. Okay, trelliott.com. And what's your current release right now?
Just at the end of the 04, and it'll be just a little bit before I can get the 05 on the market.
Okay. And Ross, how about you?
Well, similarly to Ted, our website, www.hallecvineyard, that's H-A-L-L-E-C-K, vineyard without an S, .com, is probably the best place to get our wines, but we're now in 5 states and 2 other countries. So if you're in New York or Georgia or North Carolina or Illinois, of course, California. There are plenty of restaurants and a few select retailers that carry the wines, but we always like to bring people to the website so that we can then invite them to our harvest party each year in October or September.
There you go. There's another reason to go to the website. And you just got a nice nod from Wine Enthusiast Magazine, right?
Oh, that's right. Thank you for mentioning it. We were just selected as editor's choice for it will be the June issue.
I write for them. I've got a couple short pieces in the June issue, so it looks like that issue is going to be a fun issue. Kathleen,
yes. Well, like the others, my wines are available on my website. The current releases are the 2004 Olivet Grange Pinot Noir, and just this week I released my 2006 Pinot Gris and this 2006 Endless Crush. It's called my Rosé of Pinot Noir.
Mm, and that's a great name.
Yeah, but our wines are also available in San Francisco and in the wine country, and a lot in Southern California. Mm-hmm. I'm in New York, New Jersey, Massachusetts, Arizona, Colorado, and I just shipped my first pallet to Maine, of all places. So the wines are starting to get about.
Great. Congratulations. And Guy.
Oh, I didn't say my website.
Maybe. Oh, that you didn't. Okay.
Oh, it's InmanFamilyWines.com.
And it's
I-N-M-A-N, Family Wines, and you can go with an S or without an S.
Excellent. Excellent. Thank you. Guy?
Well, my website as well is the quickest and surest way to find the wines, and that's www.daviswines.com. But my winery is also in Healdsburg on Front Street. So just up Front Street from the Memorial Bridge, not only do we make the wines there, but we have a tasting room that's open Thursday through Sunday. And I make small amounts of some other wines other than Pinot Noir that we might make just a couple barrels of that may only see the tasting room. So that's always a fun spot to go by and taste. And you're right in the cellar, and there's always a cast of characters in there having fun through the weekend. And then we're sprinkled around local restaurants like Zazu and the Underwood. We stay consistent on a few wine lists, fortunately, mm-hmm. here.
And I know I see some of you on the wine list at K&L Bistro.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Sort of my home haunt.
Mine too.
Yes. Yeah, I know that about you.
Syrah.
Which is
Syrah
a good thing.
Always
and
has my wines.
If the wine buyer at K&L is listing T.R. Elliott should be on your list.
And in the family, too.
There you go. Okay. Well, thanks for tuning in. And who knows what's going to be in this time slot next week. You should tune in to find out. You've been listening to Mouthful. It's April 1st. Have a great week.
Mouthful is produced and hosted by Michelle Anna Jordan. Lawrence Alberti is Mouthful's engineer. For more information about Mouthful, send an email to mouthful@michelleannajordan.com. That's Michelle with one L. You can also download Mouthful's free podcast from krcb.org or from iTunes. She's been there all day. I know she's cool.
something good, so let's bow our heads and pray.
Sing to the Lord, let praises be. It's time for dinner now, let's go. We got some beans and some good cornbread. Now listen to what the preacher said.
Support for Mouthful comes from KRCB Radio members and from JAG Public Relations, providing comprehensive marketing for the hospitality industry with an emphasis on wine, food, and beverages. JAG Public Relations will manage your web content and provide your graphic and still photography needs. More information at 707-795-9400 or at jagpublicrelations.com. We also have support from River Rock Casino, Sonoma County's 24-hour entertainment destination, just off Highway 128 on the Dry Creek Rancheria in Geyserville.
It's time for dinner, now let's go. We got some beans and some good cornbread. Now listen to what the preacher says.
To the Lord, let praise be.
Let it be.
It's time for dinner, now let's go.
We got some beans
and good cornbread. Listen to what the preacher says.
To the Lord, praise be.
Praise be.
It's time for dinner, now let's go.
Support for this public radio podcast comes from Acura, featuring the all-new turbocharged Acura RDX with available voice-activated navigation. More at acura.com/RDX.